Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 21 of It's Just Bodybuilding. I'm your host, Ron Parlow. I'm here with my co-host, Dusty Hanshaw. And today, we have Hunter Labrada, IFBB Pro. What do we call him, Dusty? The new sensation?
You know, we got to come up with something during. We got to feel him out. You know what I mean?
We got to feel him out. We'll try to give him a new nickname today.
He needs one. Because I'm not going by Labrada. I mean, who's even heard of that?
We'll figure these things out today on It's Just Bodybuilding.
I did what we always do. You know, you said you were concerned about us telling people who the guest was early, so I figured I wouldn't ask him until last night.
Right, right.
That way, well, I don't even know what's going to happen. Who knows?
We had a difficult time with guests over the holidays. People have, like, families and stuff and kids and shit. I don't know. Who would have thought?
Ridiculous.
Right? So we got two things we got to deal with off the bat. First of all, we got to remind everybody to like and subscribe. No matter how much they actually like us, the only way it matters is if they help us out technologically.
Yeah, so you like don't have to like us at all. You could like one of them, probably me.
Anything. Anything. You can feel sorry for us. It could be completely out of sympathy.
I'll take a pity like and comment.
And subscribe. Yes, you bet. So I'm looking forward to today's show. We got the holidays behind us. It's nice to have a guest lined up. And, you know, are you ready to bring Hunter on?
Let's do it. Let's get him rolling.
Okay. Bring him up. So, of course, Hunter won the Nationals. What was it? Was it 2018?
Last year. Last year. It was in very convincing fashion.
Yeah.
Not anyone thought he wasn't going to win before it started.
He was like an Instagram winner before it even happened.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of felt like everyone was like, oh, he put some pictures up. So, yeah.
This is done. Well, remember there was the it was like we talked about before, winning a show at the weigh-ins. This is long before weigh-ins now.
Right, right, right. We're months out. So, but I think that people, you know, they saw the improvement he was making. It was very rapid. And it's just been interesting to see, you know, obviously with the family lineage and stuff, it's quite the story. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. Are we pulling him up, Scotty?
I had a lot of notice from Dusty, so it sounds like you dropped the ball on that one, Scott.
Yep, that's definitely Scott, for sure.
There's always blame. No, it's just been getting guests around the holidays been tough, you know what I mean? And then, of course, we were sort of lazy this week and didn't really plan much. And at the last minute, we're like...
That time period between Christmas and the New Year's, those 5 days, it's always like a weird twilight zone of the part of the year.
So like, what's...
You don't want to get yourself rolling and productive again because New Year's is coming, but...
Yeah.
You don't know what to do with yourself in the 5 days thereafter Christmas, right?
Yeah. What's your Christmas like, your household? Like, is it a big family thing? Like, what did you do?
We did four Christmases this year. We did my immediate family, my girlfriend's immediate family, my girlfriend's extended family, and my extended family. So it was a good time. All the holidays, especially because my daughter, too, I'm separated from her mother. So, you know, like, we got to play that schedule and then make it to all of mine and my girlfriend. So the holidays are always hectic, but it's always
so
a good time.
You didn't train for 3 days, did you?
Dude, honestly, it's funny it happened like this. Last year... Christmas Eve ended up being leg day and there ended up being like some family drama and stuff. So I ended up like at 9 o'clock at night. I'm like, fuck this. I need to blow off some steam. Let's go train. So, you know, there's this gym that's like 30 minutes away, not 30 minutes, like 20 minutes away from us. But, you know, the gym owner's Iron City. The gym owner's giving me like a key card. It's 24/7, 365. So Christmas last year, we went and my girlfriend banged out legs with me because, you know, I need some iron therapy Christmas Eve. This year, you know, it was a lot better of a Christmas, like everything was awesome, but you know, just so happened leg day landed on Christmas Eve again. So when we got up that morning, I was like, you know what, we're gonna make a tradition out of this. We're gonna go train legs at 9 o'clock after we get done eating and doing everything. So yeah, we went again and did it this year, and then Christmas Day was the design day off in my split, and then 26th we were right back training push. So I actually didn't miss any days for Christmas this year. Worked
out. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I always do legs on Christmas Eve as well. That's what I did this year, too. I just
I'm not gonna
I love
lie.
That.
Last year, last year's workout was one of those, you know, like hate breed and the shoe get turned all the way up on Christmas Eve on the on the hack squat kind of workouts.
Right.
This year's was more of a, you know, killed calves, adductor, abductor, and then, you know, like 10 sets on the leg extension. a little different kind of workout this year. But
that's the you had the angry family and then you got the happy family workout.
Exactly.
Those are the two, right? You had one each. Okay. So what else is going on with you, man? I mean, for, you know, we're Dusty and I are fans of you. I mean, everyone that knows you,
you're
like, Hunter's a great guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. But everyone who knows Hunter's always says good things. You've seemed to have a really good start in the industry. I mean, you know, I got lots of questions about, you know, growing up a Labrada. You know, what was that like? Like, what's the earliest memory you have of bodybuilding?
The earliest memory I have of bodybuilding, this is going to be a cool one, and I'm not bullshitting y'all. This really is like my earliest memory of bodybuilding. It was recently after my dad had just got done. And, you know, I was like, I can't tell you how old I was. If I asked him, I could tell you how old I was, because he definitely remembers it too. But he took me backstage in an Olympia when I couldn't have been older than like 8. And,
right.
You know, he took me back there and, like, you know, we went in the locker room and, you know, like we saw, I think Jay and Flex Wheeler, like we saw them too. And, you know, both of them were just, you know, like sitting there just like, you know how it goes, like 30 minutes before, like before you start pumping up, but you're just waiting. So there's like dead human beings, you know, like look up, shake my hand, smile kind of deal. But I just remember seeing like I just, you know, like Lee was my dad. And at the time, you know, he wasn't small still. He was like, he retired in 95. I was born in 92. So, you know, he was, you know, big human being still, but, you know, seeing that kind of mass firsthand, that's my first memory of bodybuilding. So it's a cool one to be able to say.
So it would have been like late 90s or something, eh? When you went backstage with your dad?
Yeah. So I was born in 92. And like I said, I guess I was probably around 8, so maybe like 2000.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's right after Ronnie got done, because I didn't see Ronnie and he wasn't competing. But yeah, right after Ronnie got done.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's awesome. I know I heard you tell a story once about just seeing all the Olympia medals above the fireplace or something and how that was just normal.
Yeah, no, that's another one of those growing up with Lee stories. You know, it's I always knew he was a good bodybuilder. I always knew he, like, did really well. You know, I knew he was in the Hall of Fame. Like, cool. You know, growing up, you know, like.
Yeah.
You know, like, it changed because, you know, like, I hit, like, 14, 15, 16. And, you know, it kind of, like, sets in. I mean, not bodybuilding specifically, but more so because, you know, I was playing football at the time. You know, like, what goes into being truly world class at, you know, like, any athletic endeavor. So, at that point, you know, it started shifting from just being, oh, those are medals to, like, oh, okay, he's one of the best in the world at something.
And then, yeah,
you know, get older and older and older, and it's like, okay, you know, I want to do this bodybuilding thing, and, you know, I dive head into bodybuilding and truly get into it, and, you know, truly realize how hard it is to step on that stage, period, let alone finish top 4 7 times in a row while you're 5'6" and 185 or 190 pounds, you know, against Lee Haney and the like. So, you know, it definitely shifted over the years from just being, oh, those are medals from what dad used to do, to holy shit, dad's one of the best bodybuilders ever. So it's definitely had a little dynamic shift, and those medals have been a paradigm for sure.
Yeah, that sort of thing you mentioned, like realizing that it takes that to be a champion and applying it to yourself. Was that like that happened during football? Like it was like a high school realization?
It was a real, when I say I had a realization, the realization with those medals came more so realizing just how good he was at what he did.
Right.
You know, at that point, you know, like growing up, it was never for bodybuilding, but growing up, you know, it's, you'll appreciate this. I played hockey from the time I was 4 until the time I was 13, right? Ice and roller, loved hockey, played forward, was super scrappy, scored a lot of goals, you know, like loved hockey. Dusty, you played hockey too, what am I saying? Just bro.
And I'm Canadian, so, you know.
Hockey was my sport, and then, you know, shifted to football and played football all through middle school and high school and earned a scholarship. So I was always heavily involved in sports. You know, Lee was very much so. He was never that obnoxious, like, baseball dad who's, you know, making his 8-year-old feel like this big.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, there was some tough love involved in, you know, being your best and doing well. You know, it wasn't just enough to try hard. You know, I was expected to excel, you know. So
Definitely
had that instilled in me from a young age. But the medals more so was more me realizing, you know, he wasn't just a bodybuilder. He wasn't just a good bodybuilder. You know, he's one of, like the all-time greats at what he did. And that's the, you know, the shift that it's made over the years, I guess.
Yeah. I always tell people, you know, when you look at the height and the body weight and compared to the era that he was coming from and into, I tell a lot of people that if you do the ratio, Lee Liberato was the greatest small bodybuilder of all time. And yeah. I mean that with like the most respect. Like when you say smaller bodybuilder, you're like the smaller guys, like nobody was left at that body weight when he was still doing well.
I always say this. I'd love to see what, you know, like guys like my dad, Lee, and, you know, like Danny Padilla and such would have done with that 212 division in existence. You know, those are some like the most balanced, like pleasing physiques of all time. You know, and I get it because, you know, I'm very much so like placed in the middle because obviously my dad's Lee. But then you see the physique I have, you see the contemporaries that I grew up with, and you see what I'm competing against. So, you know, it's like I'm right in the middle of, you know, this massive expense of everything else camp, and then, you know, like old school aesthetics and Lee. So it's really interesting to be, you know, like in the middle of them, you know, just kind of seeing how things have shifted, and it's the coolest perspective to have, I guess you could say. I wish we could have seen Lee on a 212 stage. I think he would have done really well.
Oh man, so I don't know. I haven't told the viewers this. I know Hunter, I've talked to you about this, but your dad was the first pro I ever met. So I was only 15 years old, and you know, I was from a northern Alberta, you know, Canadian farm town. So like pros didn't come to our town. Like there was just, you're not going to run into a pro bodybuilder. You know, it was 1991, and the guy that owned the gym brought Lee Liberato up for a seminar, and he was 6 weeks out from the 91 Olympia.
Oh, that's cool.
And I remember he showed up and he shaved his mustache, and we were all like, oh shit. He shaved his mustache. It was like a big deal.
It's important stuff.
Because
funny you'll say that. I guess I'm Skyping with you on my phone, so I can't like show people. But someone tagged me in this video, and I'll send it to both y'all after we get done. But it's my dad before, I think it might be the 91 Olympia, with his mustache shaved, talking about everything. And it creeps me out because I swear to God, like how he talks, how he sounds, like the mannerisms. Everything, it's like me, and it's really like creepy. I'll send it to y'all after.
It happens faster than others. There's a lot of great athletes here today, you know, but I feel that I have the potential to do it, and I think that I will do it.
With the lost mustache, all of a sudden it's you.
I remember
like when he shaves the mustache and then he loses the 30 years of like business experience and polish to how he talks.
Right. Lose all polish and a mustache and you got me.
All skill and experience before all that.
He was masked with class. I'm a lot more masked with a little less class.
Right, okay. Okay. I remember one of the I remember I was glad and probably lucky that I got this lesson early, but here I was 15 years old and your dad was in the gym because it was earlier in the day. So the seminar wasn't till later. And of course I'm going to camp out at the gym all day and wait for Lee Liberato to show up. Right. Cause I'm a 15 year old fanatic. I can't believe he's coming. And so I camp out at the gym all day, just waiting. I don't know when he's going to show. And he shows up and I remember thinking, oh, he's not big. Cause he had like a sweatshirt on. And I was like, I just didn't realize that his frame was the size it was. I was like, oh, I knew he was smaller than Lee Haney, but I just didn't realize that he wasn't going to be a big guy. And I remember being like, oh, he's not big, you know? And then he, about halfway through his workout, he took his hoodie off and just had a tank top on. And then I was like, oh, okay. I get it now.
He always likes to joke. He goes, yeah, I'd be backstage and all these people would be looking at me because I look like a tennis player in my warm-ups, and then he'd be like, holy shit, when I take everything off.
Yeah, it was a good lesson for a kid, you know, good to see that early. But what do you think is, you know, as far as bodybuilding goes, what would be some of the advice that you think you got from your dad that you just think is the most solid, you know, like what do you think you're the luckiest to have learned from him when it comes to bodybuilding?
So I'm paraphrasing the lessons, but the two biggest ones that he has taught me for sure are take my time and stay in my own lane. And, you know, I know those are kind of generalized things to say, but, you know, like I'll give you all the 30-second backstory because anyone that's like listened to more than one interview with me has heard this story like in its entirety, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, but, you know, decided to be done playing football when I was 18 years old. And from that point on, you know, it wasn't like, oh, I was lost in the wind for 3 or 4 years and then decided I wanted to do bodybuilding. You know, I gave up my football scholarship to do bodybuilding. So, you know, like the day after I quit football, it was in the gym, pounding food, not running anymore. I went from like 195 pounds, like rocked up running back, to 230 pounds by Christmas. Give you an idea.
Right.
I started training for football or for bodybuilding. So
yeah,
I was at 18 years old. I didn't compete until I was 24. You know,
yeah.
So for 6 years I trained, you know, because Lee was like, yeah, we could do a teen show, but what's the point? Because, you know, like I told him, you know, like no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I want to do this professionally. And he was like, okay. And, you know, like at first, I think it was kind of one of those, you know, I'm not going to like shit on my son's dreams, but, you know, we'll see how he can do. And, right. You know, as the years went on and I put on the size and, you know, I was like, okay, well, you know what? We need to take our time. You need to take your time. You're not trying to be a good amateur. You're not trying to be the best amateur. You're not trying to be a good pro. You're trying to be a great pro. So what's the point in cutting down when you weigh 190 pounds? You're going to be 165 pounds on stage. So, you know, from the time I was 18 until I was 24, I literally lived in perpetual off season. I, you know, all through college, you know, I'm not going to say I didn't enjoy college. I went out and partied like the best of them from time to time. But, you know, 90% of the time in college, you know, I was eating six times a day and training, you know,
with
at least 90% of the intensity that I have now when I train. You know, so it was head first bodybuilding for 6 years before I ever competed. It was patience. And, you know, my first show, I won my class in the overall, and, you know, everyone's like, oh, my God, you got to go do nationals. And Lee was like, you are not ready for that. You need at least another year. And so I was like, okay. And, you know, took my year again, went and did Dallas Europa, you know, won the Supers and the overall at that show. Everyone's like, okay, you've got to be going to do nationals this year. I go, nope, one more year at least. And, you know, and then off season again, and then I had the year I had in 2018, which is, you know, won my class in the overall at Junior USAs and then won my class in the overall at Nationals. And, you know, J.M. Mannion at the shoot after Junior USAs knew I was going to be doing Nationals. And he told me in my ear, he's like, you know, the last athlete to win a junior level national show and a national show overall, right? And I go, no, who was it? And he goes, Phil Heath. Like, okay, well, that's not bad company to be in. So that was in the back of my head for the whole year. But, yeah, so that was definitely, you know, like the being patient lesson he taught me. And then the other huge one was, you know, stay in your own lane. And, you know, I'm paraphrasing a lot, you know, like a bunch of things go into like boiling it down to that. But, you know, Lee was one of the smaller guys and he was competing. He couldn't chase math because he would blow out his lines and, you know, why he was so good would go away. You know, he always had people going, well, what if you came in 5 pounds heavier? What if you came in 8 pounds heavier? You know, what if you tried training your legs a little harder, do this or that? You know, he was always one of those. He had a clear vision of what he wanted to look like. He knew what his strengths were, and he marched to the beat of his own drum and stayed in his lane and made his physique how he wanted it to. And, you know, I feel like someone like me, you know, it's like tenfold these days. Because, you know, it's like anytime anyone shows any kind of genetic promise ever, everyone's like, oh, my God, send them off to Kuwait, put them on 10 grams, let's see how big we can get them.
Right.
You know, it's like everyone just, you know, like, let's see how big we can get everything. And it's like, I know very much so. I feel like Lee, but in the modern era, I'm never going to be 280 pounds on stage. I don't want to be. It'll blow up my lines, A. And then B, you know, growing up with Lee, one of the best things that I've had him show me, you know, another great lesson, we'll call this lesson three, is there is life after bodybuilding, man. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to be 40, 45 years old, needing a knee replacement, having my internal health in shambles, you know, not able to, like, play with my daughter. And, you know, it's like, I fully expect I'm having like a reverse retirement kind of deal. Because, you know, like right now I'm not getting to go snowboarding with my daughter. I'm not getting to do all the water sports. I'm not going to do all the fun shit that you typically do in your 20s and 30s. So like, I fully plan on getting done with bodybuilding and having a body capable of doing all that shit. So, you know, it's like I very much so have realized I need to stay in my own lane in terms of, you know, like the size that I put on, the physique that I bring, and, you know, like what I want to present. And, you know, it's really awesome because, you know, bodybuilding as a whole, I feel like it's starting to take a turn in a direction where that mindset will be rewarded. You know, it's not like mass building like I feel like it's been, you know, for the last decade. I really feel like it's starting to, you know, take a turn, you know, with guys like, you know, Pat's a case of point, you know, like he got rewarded. You know, you can't overlook a physique like that. You can't overlook, you know, the younger guys coming up with the tight waist and the size. And, you know, I told you how I've kind of been in the middle of that, you know, aesthetics over here and, you know, mass at the expense of everything over here. Well, I feel where I'm at is bodybuilding. You know, it's not aesthetics building. It's not mass building, it's bodybuilding. It's supposed to be a harmony between the two. So that's what I'm trying to go for, at least. And that's what Lee's lessons have taught me.
That's awesome, man. That's Dusty have talked about that before. Like, you have to work with what you have. You can't be someone else's body. You know, like, I went through that myself, being a taller bodybuilder who didn't have like the round, bubbly sort of look. I had to be super hard, and I had to suffer to diet. And you have to, like,
feel shredded. I still remember seeing pictures from your qualifier.
You know, so just stuff like that, right? You know, you have to know what you got to do with your body. I mean, some guys, you know how some guys never look flat, so they don't have to worry about being flat ever because they're just so round and crazy, you know? But it always fascinates me when I see someone come up, like, you know, like when there's a dad who played in the NHL and then his son plays in the NHL, you always think, man, like, how, obviously that's a perfect storm of genetics and mindset. And then there's the fluke of that person also being that interested in the same thing.
Right.
Right. You know, because there's a lot of talented kids of talented people, but they just get into other sports. So you don't really see that, you know, you don't really kind of compare like that. But when
I'm very blessed to have a great relationship with Lee. A lot of kids want to be nothing like their fathers, you know. So
right. Yeah, for sure. What about the business side of things for you, Hunter? When you look at bodybuilding, I mean, in today's era, you know, your dad's era was how good are you at bodybuilding era? But this era is how good are you at bodybuilding and marketing yourself era? So how do you feel about that side of things and what you plan on doing?
I'd argue with you, it's purely a how well can you market yourself era these days.
Right, purely. The people making purely.
Money are the people who are best at marketing themselves, not the best bodybuilders. And that's, I was just talking to you about how I'm in the middle of the athletics and the math thing. Let me talk to you how I'm in the middle of a company being an athlete and then me being right here, because I see both sides of it.
Yep.
You know, as an athlete, I think it is the stupidest thing in the world that I worked for the last 12 years to get to a spot where, you know, 15 years ago, I would have had a contract and this and that. And, you know, it's like you arrive at something and then you have that because you worked, you put in the work, you got to the point where you're one of the best, you know, people want to hear about you. That's not the case anymore. Obviously, I'm preaching to the choir. Whoever makes the most money is who can show, you know, companies, sponsors, whatever you want to call them, like, hey, when I make a post on my social media, this is the kind of interaction you get. This is the kind of reach it has. This is my conversion rate. You know, it's like, it is a business owner and as businesses, we have never had an easier time seeing the return on our investment with sponsoring people. You know, in the past, it had been kind of fuzzy, you know, like, okay, we're paying athlete XYZ $100,000 a year. Like, what are we getting out of it? You know, like, we're sending him to these 10 shows. You know, like, he's wearing our shit in the photo shoots. Like, what is that turning into back to us, though? Now it's all these companies sponsoring these people. At the end of the month, they can say, okay, athlete XYZ, you know, like, $60,000 was spent using his code. He made us this much money. At the end of the year, you can add it up and be like, okay, this guy did not make sense to have. You know, like, wish you all the best. You're like, on to the next. You know, that's from the company standpoint. From the athlete standpoint, you know, it's like, you can be, like, just, and this is the shitty part, you can be just killing it, absolutely killing it for the company that you're with and doing what you're doing as a job. But the fact of the matter is, this, you know, 18-year-old who has a drug problem and has been on a Stairmaster for an hour a day for the last year and wants to show everyone her asshole and all of her posts, is going to make more money than you, because that's what people want to see. And, you know, I'm being, like, super-duper-duper critical when I say it like that. And that's, like, you know, like, boiling all the bad down into one. But, you know, it's, like, I feel like y'all get what I'm saying. I wish it was more you got paid according to the value and the worth that you bring. And, right. You know, I have no problem with the people who aren't competing. And, you know, even, like, the cute little girls. Like, there are so many girls out there that are pretty and, you know, have the tits and ass posts. But in the same breath, they're using that platform to spread actual valuable information about, you know, like, nutrition, training, and, you know, like self-worth, motivation, whatever. You're like, that's awesome. You know, like, more power to y'all. I get it. Y'all are providing a service. Y'all are providing value to people. Like, people are, you know, resonating with it. And that's me as a person. Me as an athlete, I'm like, well, that's kind of shitty. I wish I could have that money. I worked hard for it. You know, so it's definitely an interesting dynamic. And, you know, that being said, you know, I don't have a following like Dusty or Ron. You have, you know, I have a decent following. I've been able to monetize it. You know, as time goes on and it grows, I'm able to monetize it more. So I don't want to sit here and bitch like, oh, it sucks, because I am on, you know, like the nice end, the good end of the system, at least, you know, in a little bit at this point. You know, it's definitely an interesting world we live in.
I think it definitely is. When did you stop working at Labrada? I know that was a couple of years ago. How did that come about? It was just time to put all of it into bodybuilding, or what?
So Labrada, I started at Labrada when me and all my brothers, we did the same thing. Whenever we hit our freshman year of high school, we were expected to work in the warehouse during the summers and Christmas breaks. And, you know, warehouse job turned into, you know, riding in the delivery van, delivering orders, servicing accounts, you know, like meeting the people we're actually selling to. That turned into, you know, like being in like an office internship role. And I'm talking like me right now. So, you know, went from delivering shit to, you know, like working like an office internship role while also sitting in on the management and the marketing meetings to start getting a business education. To, you know, once I finished up my degree at Texas A&M, I came to work full time in the marketing departments. You know, so I wore a lot of different hats over the years, and I'd like to say that, you know, I saw it from the ground up, and got to come to work full time for Lee as a in the marketing department, and worked for him full time for just under 2 years. And, you know, I had a really good time doing it. You know, he really has built like a family business culture there. But it was getting to the point where, you know, I wasn't doing the stuff that I enjoyed doing in the company. And it was more like the R&D side of things, the content, this and that. It was more, you know, the nuts and bolts of social media marketing and, you know, having to deal with influencers and, you know, this, that, and other. And to be honest with you, stuff that required extreme organization. And I'll be the first one to say I'm not the most organized person in the world. Right. So I started getting to the point where I wasn't really enjoying what I was doing, you know, in the office. And consequently, and you know, at the same time, you know, I was starting my prep for my first show ever. And, you know, at that point, I was like, okay, well, you know what? I'm 24 years old. I finished my degree. I have my degree. You know, I do have enough connections to where I can get a big boy job, you know, like when I want to get a big boy job. You know, it's like, let's do this bodybuilding personal training thing for a little while. And right. So whenever I initially stepped away from Labrada, it was, you know, I was training enough clients and doing enough online coaching that I was able to pay my bills still, right. You know, because whenever I stepped away from Labrada initially, you know, it's like I hadn't done, you know, anything yet in bodybuilding. So I wasn't, you know, able to claim any kind of sponsorship money from that. And if I'm not working for the company anymore, that basically what I'm saying is, yeah, once I stepped away from Labrada initially, you know, there was no money coming from Labrada anymore. It was all, you know, off the personal training stuff and this and another. So, you know, that was definitely a transition, and it definitely helped me to see, you know, I prepped for that first show, and it was nice having the freedom in my schedule, but within 6 months, I found out, okay, I really don't want my life to depend on me getting up at 5:30 in the morning and getting to the gym and training 7 or 8 people every day. Like, that's not what I want to do either, you know? So, started trying to distance myself from doing, you know, in-person stuff, more, you know, online stuff, and that was what I did for all of 2017. And then, you know, 2018 came around after I had won, you know, like the initial national level show. You know, that's when we got back to being like, you know, payrolled athlete with Labrada kind of deal. Nice. And, you know, did that whole year and, you know, being back on, you know, having some sponsorship money coming in allowed me to kind of step away from the personal training entirely and, you know, start to pull back on the online coaching. Because, you know, I'm a big believer in, you know, like knowing what you want to do and then taking the steps to do it. You know, I knew I wanted to win nationals in November. And then I knew I wanted to spend all of 2019, you know, traveling, doing guest posings, doing appearances, having my off season, you know, gearing up for a pro debut. I didn't really want to have that many obligations. And I felt like, you know, like I'd be making enough income wise to where, you know, that was a plausible thing to do. Well, right. You know, hindsight's 2020, won nationals, but ended up needing my shoulder fixed. So 2019 was a little bit of a funky year because, you know, I wasn't busy with all the things I was planning on doing. And at the same time, it kind of stepped back from doing all the in-person personal training stuff. And so it was definitely interesting from that standpoint. The huge blessing, though, is, you know, after winning nationals, you know, obviously earned my pro status, and, you know, at that point had done, you know, 2-3 YouTube series, you know, proven both to Labrada and to Gas that I was able to drive traffic and sales, and so I was able to get both contracts with both those companies locked down, you know, in the wake of the Nationals win. So 2019 could have been a lot worse. You know, I could have had to have that surgery and not have that done, and, you know, it would have been very interesting making ends meet for a little while. Not that I would have been worried about it in the long run, and, you know, still would have made for a couple of very stressful months, though. So.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
What exactly did you have done to your shoulder? Because I remember following you on Instagram and stuff, but just tell everybody.
Okay, so in a nutshell, I've said like this like six times, and I'm going to do like the 30-second version.
That's good.
15. I broke my arm up here and dislocated my shoulder at the same time playing football. When I did that, unbeknownst to me, because I didn't get an MRI, we decided it was x-rayed, healed, let it go, good to go. I blew out a ligament called the transverse humeral ligament, which is the little ligament that goes across your bicep tendon and holds the long head of your bicep in place in the occipital groove. So basically for 10 years, that tendon had been slipping in and out of the groove. And lucky me had gotten to the point where it got painful right after Junior USAs, to the point where I didn't think I'd be doing Nationals. And, you know, ended up, you know, getting MRI, 2-3 different doctors' opinions. Two doctors like, no, you need to have surgery. The last one was like, no, I think you can get through Nationals and then have it. I'll be like, your opinion.
You're the winner.
You tell me what I want to hear. Yeah. It's exactly what I look for in a doctor.
I ended up doing that. And, you know, I really didn't think I was going to be doing Nationals for like over a month. And it's kind of funny. It's what put me in such a bad spot to start the prep, because I like, ate my feelings and then wasn't training upper body, because like everything was so painful. Like I couldn't train my upper body. So I was like, I was eating all the food and training legs twice a week for a month or 6 weeks, basically. So that's what I was doing. So I was like, fat fuck starting that prep. But, yeah, we got it done. That whole prep from 12 weeks in, I didn't do a shoulder press. From 12 weeks in, I didn't do a single bicep curl. The whole prep, never pressed on a bar. The whole prep only. It was basically my training philosophy was get in the gym, be as intense as possible to get your heart rate up and burn as much fat as possible, and then do as much as you can with the weights to preserve the tissue. Because, you know, like, We're on prep. We're trying to preserve tissue. Let's be honest. It's like, in my head, though, I was like, I knew, you know, there is no way in God's gentle green earth you're going to be able to put tissue on feeling like this. So, you know, got through Nationals, won Nationals. You know, I'm not going to lie. I was honestly kind of disappointed with how I looked, because I know I could look so much better. But long run, it bodes well for me, because I'll be able to present a crazily improved package.
You'll get that extra rebound.
See? That's smart. You brought down the expectations. The bar, right? Which is what I do when I meet people up front. I bring their expectations down. I say anything nice.
The long game.
S for satisfactory.
It's funny. You know, like, I'm posting pictures of, like, front doubles right now. I was like, dude, your arms have grown like 5 inches. And I was like, yeah, it's incredible. It can happen when I can actually train, right?
Right. I'm doing curls again, which is awesome.
I can do a bicep curl, and I can actually press and train like I want to. It's incredible what happens, right? But yeah, no, so got done with Nationals, tried to get it better, like, you know, just like by resting it, eating, you know, like just taking time off. Wasn't getting any better. It's like, okay, fuck it, we have to do it. Had it done in March, right after I got back from the Arnold. And, you know, lo and behold, whenever I woke up, the surgeon was like, well, it's a good thing we did it. It wasn't presenting on the MRI, but your bicep tendon was pretty much torn in half. It was holding on, like, by a couple threads. And so I had orthoscopic surgery. I have 5 little scars like that. If the bicep had ruptured, obviously, you know, massive open shoulder surgery, my arms never looking the same. And honestly, I probably would have been done with bodybuilding because I don't like to be a pessimist, but the level at which I wanted to do it at, you don't do it with a mangled arm. And like I said earlier, you know, there's life after bodybuilding. I'm not going to do it. Goes into being competitive as a pro, knowing that I'm not going to be able to do well. Dodged a huge bullet with that one. And, you know, in the months after were super, super duper weird. You know, very depressed and very angry about it. You know, took a huge hit to my income. You know, the gym's been my outlet since I've been 14 years old for any kind of aggression or issues that I'm feeling. So just threw me into a tailspin for a while. Definitely learned a lot about myself. Definitely spat me out the other end, you know, mentally stronger. So like to see the glass. I'm a glass half full kind of person for sure. But definitely was a shitty couple months. And but yeah, no, man, you know, you get it in your rear view. You put it in your rear view. And, you know, just it's really nice to have the decision, you know, like reinforced and affirmed. You did the right thing. Because, you know, it's like for the first time in 2 years, you know, I'm looking forward to training. You know, it's like I'll train push, and then the next day, even, you know, it's like, God damn it, I can't wait to train chest again. You know, it's like, because like for the longest time, you know, any kind of press, like any kind of pressing was super painful. Any kind of curls, super painful. You got to the point where I didn't enjoy being in the gym. It was work. And, you know, to have that not be like that anymore, it's been really, really awesome. So,
yeah, there's sort of two things I'm picking up, which is no news to Dusty and I because of all the guests we've had on. But you keep talking about how you chose bodybuilding over everything else. And you keep talking about just how much you love to train. And those two things are just like broken record repeaters with every guest that we have on, because we tend to have on the hardcore guys and girls, you know, and everyone from, you know, Dana Lynn Bailey to, you know, Jordan to, you know, you, everyone's saying the same thing. And those two things are kind of, I think, essentially, Dusty, what this show's about.
Just a little bit. Well, you know, it's funny, I had a guy ask just yesterday, how often do you have bad workouts, like where your mind just isn't there? And I'm like, never. I don't know what that means, like, because that's all I want to do. It's like I wake up in the morning on an off day. It's like, fuck.
I want to hit on certain days, but it's never, oh, my God, I don't want
to. It's not like you weren't there, you know what I mean?
You know, truthfully, though, if you don't really love training, you need to find a different sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, because
you know,
that's
good. Training's supposed to be the fun part in what we do. Training, getting to see the physique you're building is supposed to be the fun part. It's the dealing with the aches and pains all day long, having to force feed yourself every single day for months on end. That's all the shit that's hard. Training's supposed to be the fun part. You know, it's supposed to be, you know, like I don't know. Competing's fun. Competing's fun for me from the standpoint that it still gives me an outlet to stand next to someone. It's like, I did what you did for the last 16 weeks, and I'm better than you.
Right.
Like, as bad as that sounds, you know, like, that's why
I don't sound bad at all.
That's why, you know, like in football, I played defensive back in football. We played a lot of man-to-man in football, you know.
A lot of like, chirping.
It was an all-state cornerback, and, you know, it was fun because, you know, at the end of the game, I was like, well, you didn't catch a single fucking ball, and I dominated you. So, you know, it's fun to be able to say that, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, like, no, it's not my favorite thing in the world to, like, shave down and get tanned and be glazed. And, you know, it really is a glorified beauty pageant. And I'm not hating on our sport because I really do, like, love even the competing aspect of it.
But, yeah.
You know, I definitely love the 16 weeks leading up to competing much more than peak week and competing, for sure.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Dusty. I know you got some.
Well, I had to bring this up because it was one of the first questions asked. Force feeding. And the Labrada blend up meals. Let's get this out there, right?
So I believe I've landed on a name for it, a trademark name, and that is the steak shake.
Oh goodness!
not to be confused with steak in shake. It's the steak shake.
Right. You don't want to get sued.
Yeah.
Right? You don't want to.
Careful.
But basically, yeah. So for a while now, because I'll eat seven meals a day right now. So two of them are egg whites for the protein sources. Two of them are whey protein for the sources. The last one of the day is a Greek yogurt source. And then two of them are animal protein sources. So, you know, the egg whites, I'll blend them with oats in the morning and for my sixth meal, and I'll drink them. Pre-workout, I'll eat whey and white rice. I can eat white rice like it's like a champ right now, especially right now because I'm washing everything down with apple juice for extra calories.
Right.
But, you know, for the longest time, you know, like the meat was just like I'd heat my meat up and I'd look at it and like I'd take a bite and like I'd be like 30 seconds a bite trying to get it down. And, you know, it's like, oh, my God, my appetite sucks. And I was like, okay, maybe you need to make the food taste better. So I started sprucing it up for a while. Still hard to get down. My appetite got so bad that it was to the point where it's like I could, like, go to, like, Perry's Steakhouse or buy the nicest filet the grocery store had and cook it. And I'd like to think I'd cook a good steak, and I'd struggle to get 8 ounces of steak, though. So I was like, okay, we got to figure something out. This sucks. So, yeah, basically just started cooking all my ground meats. I do ground meat and ground chicken with, like, zero spice and zero anything. And I'll just throw it in the old Vitamix, and I got beef bone broth and chicken bone broth, and I'll do, like, one serving, so 240 mls with, you know, the 7 to 9 ounces of meat, depending on the meal for the day. And just blend it and drink it. And, you know, I think a lot of people think it's gross because, you know, I have a Vitamix. And if you're a bodybuilder and you drink a lot of shakes, you should have a Vitamix or a BlendTec. But that Vitamix, you know, it liquefies things to the point where it's like, I don't know, it's not terrible.
Right.
You know, if like a normal blender and it's still like chunks floating around in it. Like, yeah, that's pretty
right.
Heavy. But, you know, it definitely is like completely liquefied. So, to me, it's a no-brainer because, you know, it's like I can finish a meal in 5 minutes and not be sitting there cussing under my breath at ground meat for 30 minutes.
Are you throwing your carbs in there, too? Is the rice going in the blender?
No. Ah, okay. I'll drink the meat and then eat the carbs right after.
It's a dessert, basically, of course.
Yeah, exactly. A meat dessert. A blended meat smoothie for dessert.
Wow.
You didn't know about that, huh, Ron? I laughed.
Well, three people
asked about it. I'm like, I love what people care about. Tell me about the steak
shake. I didn't know Hunter had his own formula. I, you know, I've heard of the tuna Diet Coke. That's old school, you know, tuna and Diet Coke in the blender.
Or orange juice, tuna and orange juice.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. But, yeah, that's something else. I know I'm going to get questions about that. People are going to come up to me at the gym. Have you ever blended a steak?
Now, let me say this. If you did what I'm talking about, but you threw in, like, some, like, I don't know, like, some soup ingredients, you know, like some tomatoes or some onions and some seasonings, and then poured the mixture over rice and stirred it up, that'd probably be, like, some pretty tasty soup. I'm just saying, like, if you want to get into steak shake light or, like, you know, like, slowly get into steak shake.
Hunter, you're
crawling them into the steak shake.
This is a cookbook writing itself. You have a recipe book.
Brett Wilkin, he asked me about it a couple months back, and, you know, like, I'll get, like, messages from him of him blending meat all the time now. And the other day I joked about it. I was like, I need to write an e-book about blending your food.
Oh, yeah.
It's a unique angle. I mean, there's like 6,000 booty ebooks out there and like 10,000 leg day ebooks. I haven't seen one on blending your food.
Well, there you go.
And apparently there's a need for it because all of us have fought the food at some point or another. I know that I spent a few months. I've had people ask me all the time, so how do you get the food down? And I'm like, well, you just do. Like,
yeah, you just cancel.
They want a secret. I'm like, bro, I wish there was a fucking secret, but now there is.
Well,
now there
ask,
is.
Yeah, that. Or if they ask about a secret, you can tell them about the steak shake. I always like to joke with people too. I go, well, it's the swish and swallow, and they're like, I'm stupid. And I go, well, you put as much food as you can fit in your mouth, chew it up like 50%, and then get some water and put it in there and swish.
Oh,
and
yeah,
swallow.
That's all it takes.
Repeat until the meal's gone.
Yes,
it's very, very accurate. Well, we need to grab some of these questions here. Ron, because I'm going to disappoint a lot of people.
We do this all the time, Hunter. We have guests on, and we don't get to anyone's questions because we're talking like we're
I
having
ask
good time,
for questions.
Right?
I get 100 of them, and we ask two.
Ask questions, guys. But in reality, we're just going to shoot the shit for an hour and a half with y'all thinking your questions coming up any second. But
right.
That's how we have them waiting. That they're going to hear theirs on the show. So you're doing what show then?
Yeah, what's the plan?
So right now, haven't signed the contracts or anything. I don't even know how that works, honestly. I probably should get on getting my pro card for next year.
I went to that.
Yeah, right now the plan is I'm going to do New York and then Cal a week later.
So what this person asked is there going to be a road to the New York Pro video series?
There will be. Definitely going to gear up and do a YouTube series for it. Probably to the tune of an episode every other week.
Nice.
And keep that going for all the prep. Definitely be getting up to Dallas a lot, training at the new destination with Gasp, and then definitely going to be getting around the country a little bit. Go train with Joe Bennett out in Tampa. Probably do a week with Flex and Boca, and it's kind of get around a little bit. You know, just the places that I know it's not going to impact the prep at all. In fact, enhance it. You know, just being around that, but. Definitely planning on doing a series, and definitely planning on having some cool things to show y'all during the series.
What's the relationship with Flex like? Like how do you just you go to Flex, you go to see Flex in Boca? You said just casually.
Yeah, no. So I was pretty blessed. So long story short, Flex's coach Neil. Neil's a huge Leaf fan. So Flex over the years has always been kind of had Neil in his ear about lead the things this way or that way or look at this and so mm-hmm. That's I think the initial how it came to be, and I've just seen him over the years, and from the time of before I even started bodybuilding, I think he's kind of seen me come up a little bit, but it's pretty cool for, the Nationals prep and stuff, he'd be dropping comments or messages to me, during the year. And then, as it got a little closer and closer and closer, offered me the opportunity to come out and train there, before Nationals. So, I don't know if y'all seen that footage. We just really got to go out there and train, and, a bunch of the animal guys were there too. And had him get to take a look at me after, and, made a little tweaks and stuff, but it's cool just to, obviously have someone at his level just kind of looking over your shoulder and offering a little bit of insight. And then, like I said, just being around that, it's, iron sharpens iron. So it's definitely been a cool thing to be around. And, ever since that Nationals trip, I've gotten to get out there, two other times, it's just been, crush weights, eat food, rinse and repeat. They're definitely, larger than life as he is. He's definitely just one of us when it comes down to it. So
yeah, for sure.
Cool guy to be around.
Yep. He's alarmingly normal, aside from being like a hilarious leprechaun, but
it's been my experience with a lot of people in our industry too. A lot of people are alarmingly normal. You have your hidden gems, but most of us are alarmingly normal.
I was gonna say I do know a daywalker from Gold's Venice, but anyway.
Yeah. Your bodybuilding is interesting. You got that sliver on the end that parties their fucking asses off, and you don't know how they're still any good. And then you have that sliver of guys that are remarkably lazy. And then you have a huge band of really, really hardworking people that are just love to, they're just great. Everyone's in it, Everyone's in it together. It's pretty cool. Go ahead, Dusty.
All right, I'm getting yours.
Touching on what you said real quick, this is one of my favorite things about bodybuilding, so I got to at least say something about it.
Yeah.
I think it's so cool that, it's you can meet people. Nationals last year, I had never met, Andrew Berry, Chris Wade, Nate Spear, a couple of the other guys.
Yeah.
It's we were out eating breakfast the next morning, cutting up I'd known them all for a couple of years and stuff. It's people who really do what we do, I feel like it's very easy to just kind of mesh, especially when they're normal. Because I'll be the first one to say, I fucking hate people. If you're walking around talking to me about gallons of water and chicken breast, I'm like, dude, stop. I do this too much to begin with. Please.
Yeah.
Whenever they're normal people and into bodybuilding at the level that you're at, it's pretty easy to just click with them.
I think there's a lot less. It's funny you say that. When we did the last year at the LA Fit Expo, I grabbed a Uber with a couple girls that were going to Venice, and we're driving there. And just hearing them reminded me of what it was like when you first started, because everything they talked about, I need to weigh this, and I brought my scale, and I'm like.
So excited about every little.
You're gonna be done with this sport so quickly if you don't learn. You know who taught me that was Jose. Was how to not you're obsessive and you're organized, but you also know how to wing it a little bit too. This Hunter from doing trips now. The first couple trips I did, I would bring my diet with me and nail it, day in and day out. And I would come home and I'd step on the scale and I lost 9 pounds. And you're like, what the fuck? And, you know, diet obviously didn't matter. I lost weight. And I remember we're at dinner one time and I ordered exactly what I should get. And then Jose goes, and he's going to take two orders of fries too. I'm like, no, I'm not. And I was in prep. And I'm working with Aceto and he knows that. He goes, he needs the fries. Get him the fries. And I'm like, you know, that's so funny. I was like, fuck it. I just ate the fries and went with it. And we did that all weekend. I remember I came home and I was down like 3 pounds, but I was in prep.
Yeah.
And I was peeled. And I sent Chris my pictures and he was like, oh, that's much better. I was like, oh, yeah, I figured it out.
Right.
It's like you don't think about this, but like Pat Moore and I just were in India for 9 days, you know?
Yep. Oh, God. How much?
I survived on whey protein, egg whites, white rice, and potato wedges and pizzas from the hotel. But yes. Anyways, you know, it's like, you know, we're there and you don't really think about it, but you're out of your element and then your activity level is so much higher than it normally is. Like I'll be perfectly blunt. I'm as close to sedentary as it gets outside of my hour and a half, 2 hours in the gym. And it's not the bad way, but, you know, it's like I do my gym time. And other than that, you know, it's like I'm like sitting working on the computer, standing cooking food, or, you know, just like I'm chilling. I'm not really doing much. I don't work a hard job. I don't like,
yeah.
So basically sedentary. It's like when you on a trip, like you're talking about for like a week or for 9 days and you're doing 2-3 store visits every day, a seminar, still training, walking everywhere, you know, it's like you don't really think about it, but your caloric, like your energy expenditure is probably like double what it is every single day. So yeah, case in point, we definitely were eating a little looser than we normally do there, and I came back 9 pounds lighter.
It doesn't fail, and that's something
you know us being the basket cases we are, we're freaking out, we're going, oh my god, I just left 9 pounds. But, you know, it's like when I took a step back, it's, you know, it's like there wasn't a single day there that I ate less than 300 grams of protein. There wasn't a single day there that I ate less than 400 grams of carbs. I didn't miss a single workout while I was there. There is no way in God's gentle green earth you ate up any muscle tissue. You lost 9 pounds of fat and water because your energy level, your energy expenditure was so much higher. And, you know, the day I got back Thursday, Friday morning, I had to drive to Dallas to shoot for gas. And, you know, it's like, I'm like, oh, my God, this is either going to go really good or really bad. So we get into Dallas. I get a triple from In-N-Out and the fries. And we go to start training, and we're shooting the winter stuff first. So I'm in, like, hoodies and long sleeves.
You're all, yes!
I'm training arms.
And the burgers are hitting you. They're filling you up.
Everything feels pretty good. Let's see what it looks like. And, you know, peel it, and I'm like, okay, we're good. I don't have to go jump off a bridge and kill myself.
Damn, that 9 pounds, it's over. It's all over.
Yeah. I think we do a pretty good job and bad job of obsessing over things like that.
I think we've all done a hope for the best photo shoot as well.
Yeah.
I think every bodybuilder has done one of those. You're like, oh man, let's just see how these go.
I really hope this photographer is better at photography than I am at bodybuilding. Let's do this.
Well, we live in the world of filters now, Dusty. We're okay.
All right, let's see here. I'm going to ask this just as I scroll by so you can hurt some feelings, but everyone wants to know about calves from a guy who was born with calves. Go ahead.
Well, actually,
you go up and down like this a bunch of times?
Yeah. So I actually wasn't born with calves. My calves stemmed from my original coach saying your calves are kind of shitty and behind everything. Start training them 3 times a week. And obviously the shape was there, but they definitely have not always been a strong body part.
Right. What would you say to a guy that wanted to bring them up? What did you do as far as the training and whatnot then?
So obviously a video would explain this much better than just saying it. But for, I don't know, the last 7 years, twice a week, I've done, you know, as many warm-up sets as I need to make it feel like I'm not going to snap my Achilles off the back of my foot. And then, you know, I'll do 2 just absolute balls heavy straight sets landing between, you know, 10 and 12 for failure. Mm-hmm. And then I'll start on that third set. I'll do that weight to start, and then I'll do a triple drop with it, you know, the drop set. And then I'll do another triple drop with it. So 2 straight sets, 2 triple drops, and then that'll typically be it. And, you know, rinse and repeat later on in the week.
Yeah.
And that's gotten my calves sore. You know, I've been able to continually progress with it. Typically, I won't do standing and seated in one workout. I'll kind of alternate between standing and seated just because I feel like I tucker myself out on the first one to the point where I can't do the second one how I need to. So I just kind of alternate. machine from workout to workout. But I feel like calves is one of those muscles that everyone blames genetics a lot more than they're just fucking lazy or pussies and can't handle the pain that comes from training calves properly.
No, I get that too, because I think that's kind of what I was going to say at the end is, so you're saying that a calf is a muscle.
Yeah.
Because I mean, that's all it is. Like, everyone wants a secret, but it's like, how did you build your chest? How did you build your back? You know, I think a lot of people, you know, train calves for a week and a half, and they're like, oh, these won't grow. Fuck it, I won't do them.
Yeah, they will grow. You got to make them grow. Yeah.
A lot of people subscribe to the, you know, it's like, oh, I got to do high reps. It's a different kind of muscle, like this, that, and another. And I'll be the first one to say calves respond well to high reps.
Mm.
But high reps in a fashion that you're doing a heavy-ass weight for 10 and then dropping the weight some and doing a heavy-ass weight for 10. And then you're going to handle volume a little better, but you still need to be taxing them with the weights. And I feel like a lot of them people. That, and then I swear to God, I don't think I've ever – I can very, very, very far and few between have I seen someone training calves in a manner which if I walked up to them, put a gun to their head and said, if you don't do another 10, I'm going to shoot you in the head, they would get another 10.
Yeah, they're always leaving on. That's because it's that toothache pain. There's a big difference between the,
the pain of
when your pecs get like a pump. You're like, oh, that feels good. You know, I literally, it's funny. My training partners give me the nastiest look, and I've gotten a few when people have overheard it in the gym. But I'll get up from a set of calves, and I always say, God, that makes me want to punch a baby. Like, just fucking angry.
Yeah, no, honestly, I call it battery acid. It should feel like you're getting fucking battery acid pumped through your calves, and then you should keep on going some more. Yeah, and like you said, whenever I get done, I'll get off the calf machine, like stomp around like I'm throwing a temper tantrum, kind of obscenely cursing for like 5 or 6 seconds. Then I'm like, I'm okay, and then I'm good.
We're good. Let's do it again.
I sort of sit there and I rock back and forth, and I just wait for everything to stop. You know, I just kind of wait, and everyone thinks I'm dancing.
Standing fetal position kind of deal.
Yes.
Rocking. Yeah.
Why couldn't I have been smart instead of want big calves? So one of my clients wants to know, what is your favorite gym in Houston and why is that the spot to go? I think he lives over there.
Ooh, I need to know that too. That's also my question.
Yeah, it's now Ron's question. Sorry, Matt. It's Ron's question now.
So a couple gyms that I really like here. I live on the northwest side in Tomball, so it takes me about 45 minutes to get to true downtown Houston. So around me, a gym like 5 minutes from here, you'll see a lot of my YouTube content's done there. Is a gym called Raw Gym. It's got good equipment, got a good vibe. The owners are super awesome. It's just, you know, it's definitely not like a hardcore vibe, if you will. Like, you're not going to go in there and get motivated by what's going on. Not that, you know, I'm really one to rely on that, but, you know, it's very much so everyone keeps to themselves, you know, kind of deal. Another gym that I train at a lot, especially, you know, like I like leg days there, and they're actually moving locations to like literally double the space they're in right now, is Legacy Barbell. That's much more, you know, black iron plate, Texas power bars for everything. You know, there's turf, it's hardcore, there's always metal blaring. You know, I like training there a lot. Dumbbells up to 150. That's on my out my side of town. True downtown Houston. Couple gyms. B-Fit's a really awesome gym. B-Fit's a gym that I would say probably, you know, it doesn't have air conditioning, so know that Houston gets pretty hot in the summer. It's pretty complete. You know, it's got a lot of cool pieces. It's got a lot of old equipment you don't see anymore. It's kept relatively clean. My favorite thing about that gym, though, is A, you know, like the vibe. You walk in there and everyone's fucking working, you know. Even if they don't know exactly what they're doing,
Everyone's working
and sweating and getting it in. So I like that about that gym. That gym will get real busy after like five, though. So I don't know if you want to do that, if you're looking for that.
Right.
And outside of that, you know, more on the south side of town, like Bay Town and stuff. Roman Iron Gym is really nice. Steelworks is really nice. Houston's so damn big, it kind of depends on where you're at.
Really?
If your client wants to DM me, Dusty, I can tell him.
Yeah, I'll tell him.
What area he's in, what gym I'd go to.
Yeah, because it's funny because we went to – when I was there with Jake, you know Jake, I love him. He's fancy, though. He takes me to some, like, pretty gym. I'm like, are they going to let me in this place?
Was it Fit Athletic?
I think so.
Walked up the staircase and it was on the
floor. There's an elevator. I took the elevator, obviously. yeah, there's – you walk in, like, a fancy smoothie bar up there, and I'm like – Hey Jake, I'm gonna do some rows off the floor. Is this gonna work?
Right.
No, that gym. I'm actually headed. That's where my physical therapist works out of. Actually, that gym.
Okay.
That gym's definitely probably one of the nicest gyms in Houston. It's A, in a very wealthy area, and then B. Yeah. It's honestly, I have absolutely zero problem with this. My brother's gay, but it's predominantly homosexual at that gym, so that's why.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's a downtown gym.
Little more clean, like froofy upscale. So yeah. That's definitely why you got the vibe from there.
Yeah, no, it was funny though, because we went in there and it was so par. I'm like, you do this to fuck with me, don't you? Because you know me, like you know what I'm looking for. He's like, it's clean. I'm like, well, all right, that's valid. I'll give you that. It's very fucking clean.
next time you're in town, make sure you let me know too. Me and Jake will grab one at Legacy. You'll like Legacy a lot.
Yeah. See, that's what I need. But at least he took me some good taco places, so he's out of trouble now. So nice, man. Well, how much time do we got? I know that we're pushing a line here with you.
We got him on for about an hour now.
Yeah, right? So I guess I only need one more thing from you. So before we can let you go, is it a goal to be on the Olympia stage in 2020?
Absolutely.
There we go. I love that somebody just fucking asked that question. It's beautiful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'll be the first one to say it. I'm training to win the New York Pro.
Nice.
Training to win the Cal Pro, and then I'm training to go and show out at my first Olympia. I can't understand people saying I'm doing it just to do it.
Right.
I'm not an idiot. I know who's going to be on the stage. You know, that being said, it's not going to affect how I work, so.
Right.
I'm going to show up looking the best that I can. I think my best is enough to win New York and Cal, and then we'll see where the chips fall at the Olympia. We'll see where the chips fall at all of them. But, yeah, no, I'm really excited for next year. I think I'm going
to show up. I'm excited to see you on stage because, just like you were saying at the beginning of the interview, you feel like you know where you land on the spectrum. And, that you were talking about having both ends of the spectrum and being in the middle. And how times have changed a little bit, and it might be the perfect time for you to arrive on the pro scene. Your timing might be better than if you hadn't hurt your shoulder.
Exactly. And the shoulder, knowing how the injury was, the surgery was going to happen. It wasn't a matter of if, it was when.
Right.
I blew my bicep.
Got it done. It's out of the way.
I feel like it was a blessing in disguise because now it's there's not going to be any momentum killer. It's not like I'm going to do New York and then it's going to be like, oh shit, I have to have the surgery. So we got it in the rear view and we're ready for a pro debut and a pro career for sure.
Yeah. Looking awesome, forward to seeing you on stage, man. Thanks for coming on.
Y'all built this, huh?
Sorry?
Y'all both be in Columbus for the Arnold, huh?
I'll be there.
I probably won't. I'm going to China for a week right before the Arnold, so I don't think they're going to make me go to the Arnold.
All right, well, we'll catch up, Dusty. Ron, we'll catch up sometime. I was in the shower thinking about the last time I saw you in person, and I'm pretty sure it was the Arnold, 2 years ago with my dad. It was like me, you, and my dad talking, and then Johnny Jackson, too, for a little
bit. I got a photo of that. I got a photo of that. I remember your dad and I were joking around because he told me, I can't remember exactly what he said, but he said he tore his calf a bit water skiing.
Yeah.
And then he tore his tricep doing something. Didn't he tear something else?
He had a little minor lat tear.
Lat tear, yeah.
And then wakeboarding. A little minor calf thing just from sprinting.
And so we're talking and I said, oh yeah, I tore my quad, and he was asking me about the surgery, and then I thought, holy shit, I'm standing here with Lee Labrada, the first pro I ever met, talking about how fucked up we are after retiring. And it was just this full circle. I had this like kind of funny moment where I thought, if I could tell the 15-year-old me, you're gonna be standing with him sharing injury stories in 25 years. It's just funny how it happens. It's not a big community. The bodybuilding world's not massive.
Little Ron, let me tell you something. When you grow up, you're going to feel like you got hit by a car every day. But you will have arrived, and your idols will have become your peers. So
it's all going to be worth it. It's all going to be worth it.
Excellent. Okay, thanks for coming on, Hunter.
Yeah,
all the best.
Sure. Appreciate it, guys.
You bet, man. Cheers.
All right, y'all have a good one. Talk to y'all soon.
We are locked, man. Well, glad we had you rock in there. Go get your appointment, and I'm going to come out there shortly, so I'll hit you up, and we're going to go.
Oh, yeah, definitely do. And whenever this goes live, one of y'all send me, like, a link or a graphic.
It'll be, yeah, just dare to. You better go up Wednesday, so we'll let you know.
Okay, cool.
Okay,
cool.
Cheers.
Appreciate y'all. See
you. You bet. That was good, man. He was good to have on.
Effortless. I told you it'd be easy.
As soon as you told me that, you said, "Hey, I'm going to give Hunter a call." I was like, "Oh, because you know, every time I've ever ran into Hunter, we've had an easy conversation."
Yeah.
And so I was like, "Oh, okay, this isn't going to be, you know, like, you know, pulling stuff. We're just going to let him talk, you know."
Yeah. No, so easy. And that's the cool thing I like about Hunter is that perfect balance of what I think a champion is, which is, you know damn well who you are. You have no fear in saying I'm here to win, because you need that confidence and even I always say a sprinkle of arrogance, because if not, it's like a fighter. You get in there and go, oh, see how it's gonna go. No, you're gonna knock the dude out every single guy or else. You know what I mean? Yeah. You can't prep at the highest level going, oh, we'll see how it goes. And I think that you know, he proved that with I mean, imagine getting ready for Nationals, your very first one, and essentially not being able to train some of your most important movements, and then saying, I still think I have enough to win.
I think I can still win this, yeah. It's very interesting, you know, I mean, you and I have seen this in ourselves and in a million other people, but, you know, coming from not just his dad being a bodybuilder, if you just remove Lee from being a pro bodybuilder, make him something else, make him like a pro hockey player or whatever, he still grew up around, you know, knowing what it meant to put in work. You know, a scholarship to play football. So clearly he had the athletic ability and the drive.
Mind you, he plays.
And all that's here.
Mind you, he plays football, high school football in Texas. That's not like playing high school football in Scottsdale.
Canada.
Like, I mean, it's funny, but people don't realize, if you've never been, like, pop into a high school football game in Texas, it might as well be a pro game. I mean, it's insanity. So, I mean, to be at that level, and you know what, you know, kind of what you're driving on is he was around greatness his whole life. His
dad's
a great businessman. His dad is a great bodybuilder. And I think it's something Evan Centopani said years ago that always stuck to me. He goes, you know how you got all these people when you're growing up saying, you could be anything you want. But as a kid, you're looking at him and going, then why the fuck did you choose to be this? You didn't do anything with that anything you want mentality.
Right.
But when your dad's Lee LeBron and you go, you can do anything you want, and you look at him and you're like, fuck, you did.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to, you know, I read a saying one time is a message is only as good as who's delivering it. So if it comes from someone who speaks it and lives it, you're like, yeah, fuck yeah. You know, Gary Vee says I can become an immigrant and then a multimillionaire. Well, he did it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a pretty sick thing. And I do enjoy the fact that he is accurate. This is the most we've ever talked about bodybuilding. I don't think he and I have ever talked about bodybuilding.
Yeah. It's funny. I don't really think we have either. Like, I know what you mean. It's like, hey, how's things in Texas? And then, you know, talking about business stuff or just, hey, like, I remember I saw him in Dubai. I think it was Dubai. I can't remember, Australia or somewhere. That was the first time I met him. And so we're just talking about traveling and, like, you know, this, all that stuff that you share with everyone on the road, you know, but we didn't, like, how many sets did you do today?
And exactly.
It didn't come up.
Yeah. I don't know how that important factor didn't jump in there. How I didn't know about the steak shake yet.
Actually, I just realized the first time I met Hunter was at that expo. I think it was Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was him and Sergio at the booth together.
Yep.
So it was funny because it was the first time I met both of them. So we were, because their booth was right next to Mutant's booth. So I joked around with him and Sergio all weekend. And I remember thinking at the time, I was like, oh, that's kind of weird because it's like Lee's son and Sergio's son.
Right.
Together at a booth and I'm talking to them. It was just kind of funny, you know. It was just both of them, obviously. And then I was going to say, you know, he's planning on winning the New York Pro, and I mean, Sergio did it.
Yep, exactly.
So it's kind of funny. I thought of that in my head. I thought, oh, well, maybe that's a little like, foreshadowing as to what's going to happen.
I just love when a guy like that says, I plan on winning the New York Pro. In my head, I'm like, well, of course.
But, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Because when I look at what he's done since the surgery, he put up some pictures last night or a couple nights ago, comparisons, boom. And you're like, that's where I think a lot of the viewers and listeners need to understand is that's where all the work ethic that we talk about meets genetics. Right. And you get that. You don't get that with one or the other. He has both. He trains like he has no genetics. He eats like, I mean, come on. How many of you guys that are so hardcore and have to do whatever it takes blend up a shake and find a way to knock this down?
I think that's a shirt. Train like you have no genetics. Is that on the back of a It's Just Bodybuilding t-shirt maybe?
Yeah, but it actually train says like train like your Dusty Hanshaw. AKA you have no genetics.
In brackets, you have no genetics.
but it does. He does train that way and he eats that way. And I think that's why you get the result you get of winning nationals with body parts that weren't even able to train.
Well, another thing too that we glossed over was he gave us his vast competition history, which I believe was
of like all wins,
four shows or something,
four and overalls,
all of them just overalls, just smoked. There you go.
Exactly.
So he doesn't even, well, I mean, he knows what it's like to lose because he played football and hockey, but as a bodybuilder, he's like, that's a pretty good role to be on when you're coming in for his pro show and you've never lost a show ever.
Well, his girlfriend just did a show last year too, a big Texas, I think Europa or whatever. And, you know, she went ahead and wanted to stay in the house because she won the overall as well. So her first show.
Yeah.
I laughed when she won the overall because I was like, well, of course she did. But fuck, that's awesome. Like, oh, how'd you do your first show? I beat everyone.
Yeah, I beat everyone. Yeah. She might have had a few good tips around the house though.
Maybe. Awesome, man. Well, I thought it was a solid episode, and I'm looking forward to seeing and hopefully now for us making a focus for this year to get all these up and comers rolling through the show ASAP. You know, I'd like to get them on before the season starts, so we can start saying, well, we had every young winner on the show.
Right. No, it was good, and I'm also had pretty good reaction about the Christmas episode we did. I got to mention, because we just did that. Like, we were basically just trying to make the YouTube algorithms happy.
We needed to get the episode.
Because right? I was talking to Scott and, you know, YouTube, if you're not consistent, like the more consistent you are, the more they favor you. Mm-hmm. So it's important to hit those, you know, special edition Christmas episodes to keep things flowing, you know,
when no one else can get on the show,
but no one else can get on. We weren't sure if anyone was going to watch. We didn't like, it was funny, but a lot of people were like, yeah, thanks for doing a show, man. I had nothing to do that day. You know,
as bad as you guys are, it was better than nothing. So
as bad as you are, I'd seen Die Hard 50 fucking times and I can't stand my sister anymore. And I was losing my mind. Like, there's just all the reasons why people went and listened to our show on Christmas. So, I was glad we did it. So we'll keep it rolling and we'll be back next week. Of course, remember, like I said, at the beginning of the show, like, and subscribe. That's really all that matters, is that you, hit us up.
To like us.
Yeah. We just pretend to like us.
Internet.
And, a sympathy subscribe would be great. And of, Dusty, I got to mention several people. I joked about having merch, but I mean, we got to get t-shirts or something. Cause I'm getting messages. People are asking.
It's time. I didn't have a ton of, faith in the need for the merchandise in the beginning, and now I do have a lot of people asking. So and now they're creating their own merchandise where they've got your quotes on it, they're sending to me, they got my quotes on it. Do I have to give you a free one now if I make that? How's that work? Anyway.
Yeah, no, I know. We'll have to get something done. I sort of had a 20 episode barrier in my head. I was like, if I can get Dusty to actually do 20 of these, then
I was on time for like 7 of them, so that's cool.
No, it's all good, man. Okay, thanks, everybody. We'll let you off the hook. We got, I think, about an hour and a half here, something like that. We'll see what it is. See what it is after they chop up the little bits that we've messed up. Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Dusty. Remember, everybody, it's just bodybuilding.